So, hailing from Australia, you know and love him. He is the host of the Bitcoin Cash podcast. He is my part-time boss and a good friend. Welcoming Jeremy with How to Make Bitcoin a Global Reserve Currency. That's it.
All right. Well, I think you all know me, so I'll skip most of the introduction, but I'm Jeremy, the host of the Bitcoin Cash podcast and co-organizer here at Bliss, and I work also on Celine with Callisti. So my talk is how to make Bitcoin the global reserve currency, because I start every single episode of the podcast with this phrase, following Bitcoin Cash on its rise to global reserve currency. Now, why do I say that? It's because in my mind, that's the best one sentence encapsulation, perhaps not quite, you know, peer-to-peer electronic cash system, but this is the best I can do to give everybody a kind of North Star that I feel like the Bitcoin Cash community is aiming towards. And it's really important for anything, especially a revolutionary movement, to have a North Star and a goal that it's aiming towards. As Emergent Reason says, if you know where you're going, you might get there. If you don't, you definitely won't. But even if you do, it's going to be a little tricky. So what do I mean when I say this? I summarize it down to one line. But for me, it's 6 to 8 billion people transacting 5 times per day in just BCH on chain. Okay, that's their grocery payments, their consumer spending, it's corporations, it's potentially governments, charities, NGOs, whatever, you know, just basic everyday financial transactions. 6 billion people can live just on BCH. Then, of course, you have DeFi, AI, subscriptions, other stuff kind of on top of that. So obviously, scalability has got to be a pretty big priority. And my timeline for this is 2045. That's a little bit arbitrary. I mean, these things are very hard to predict, but Bitcoin has been around for about 15 years. And I feel like with all the struggles and turmoil that it's gone through, given a little exponential gradient, maybe in the next 20 years, we can get there. Of course, our block subsidy is going to run out at some point. So that's also going to be an issue, which means we're on a clock. But I think if we all dedicate sort of the, you know, main chunk of our adult lives for most of us to this, then that will be kind of what we need to aim for. So that's the big picture. But of course, people don't get onboarded like that. They get onboarded like this, right? This is Bob. He's the kind of embryonic Bitcoin adopter, right? Everybody starts off in the world unaware of Bitcoin. They've never heard of it. They don't know anything about it. And we started with 8 billion people in exactly this situation. Now, of course, that doesn't last forever. We're out there shilling Bitcoin as much as we can, and there's plenty of other media. So eventually, Bob switches on the TV, or he goes on YouTube, he hears the word Bitcoin, he sees it on somebody's shirt or something like that. And for the first time, he becomes aware of it. And what happens? Well, he immediately hates it, right? People absolutely hate things that they're not familiar with, that nobody else seems to like, that is a financial system, that's a scam, that somebody is trying to push onto them, right? So we, you know, everybody who's tried to onboard anybody knows how true this is, right? But he's moved essentially from phase one to phase two. And he can never go backwards. Once you hear about something, you've heard about it, and you can't unring that bell, right? So if you track his whole journey of Bitcoin, it kind of looks like this. You're unaware, then you hate it, but repeated exposure kind of mellows people out, right? So they become indifferent. Then they hear about it more and more and more and more. They become a little bit curious. Finally, they hear about it so many times, they feel like, I need to know what's going on here, you know, and they take a proactive step. Maybe they Google it, or they ask Grok these days, they ask a friend, they find that one person who kept telling them about it, and they start asking, like, what's going on with this, right? And then they actually get into the Bitcoin economy, or so they think, because the vast majority of the time, their first point of contact is going to be a custodial service. It's going to be Coinbase, it's going to be Binance, it's going to be PayPal or Venmo, one of these services that have these terrible custodial crypto integrations. But he feels like he's done it. He feels like he's at the end of his journey. Then, a little while later, he gets surprised to find that he meets somebody who actually knows what Bitcoin is, and they say to him, you've never been used Bitcoin in your life, and they have to make an on-chain transaction, right? They get onboarded to an actual non-custodial wallet, and they make their first peer-to-peer transaction, and maybe at that point, it's just kind of a novelty, right? They just do it that one time, they think that's interesting, then they lose their seed phrase, you know, and they forget about it. But eventually, now that he's familiar with the concept, he runs into somebody who has a reason to actually do business with and is excited enough about BCH or has the need for it that they start an ongoing business relationship and they start making regular transactions. Once that has happened enough, he thinks, wait, this is actually pretty good. Like, I'm loving using this. Why wouldn't everybody use this? This is clearly the superior system, and starts advocating for it, actively shilling it to everyone else, or, you know, evangelizing for it to be the new system that everybody switches over to. And then finally, once he's done that, he becomes like the people in this room. He thinks, okay, that's not enough. I'm now accepting it for my business services. I need to go above and beyond. I need to actually create a business around this, a fresh product, a fresh innovation, you know, something to get people excited. And from that point, you know, these last two steps is helping other people to move down the pipeline, right? So that's Bob. You can only go in one direction on this flow. That's the most important thing. As time passes, people are only moving in one direction. Some people skip steps, some people are faster than others, everyone's on their own journey. But regardless, you can't really go backwards. So if we take the first two steps of unaware to hatred, the world kind of looks like this. We have 8 billion people and you have an exponential S-curve of adoption, and over time, you know, this is just an estimate, who knows whether we're at 2 billion or 5 billion, how many people in the world have gone from unaware to Bitcoin who have heard about it. There's probably children that don't know about it, right? But the end goal is by 2045, everyone will have moved from step one to step two. Now, of course, we can expand that across the full range of the 10 steps, and it looks kind of like this. You know, people are cascading down through the different levels because you can't move backwards in the pipeline. So our goal is to move Bob, or Bob's 8 billion of them, from left to right as fast as possible. That's it. That's all we need to do, is just move them down that pipeline from left to right. Projects and technology, promotion and marketing, the discussion, everything we're doing is in some way attacking this same core problem. So for instance, you can see that in the things I do, right? With Celine, that's my attempt to get somebody from step one, unaware, to over that hurdle of custodial into a P2P transaction as fast as possible, which you can do in about 30 seconds. And then Bliss is kind of the other half of the loop, right? Everybody here has basically made a P2P transaction to get a ticket, or they've been onboarded by somebody, and hopefully after 3 days of getting excited and talking to everyone, you've made a few transactions, you're convinced that it can work, and you actually want to sort of give back to the ecosystem, right? But it's not just me, obviously. Everybody can adopt this same framework and see where would your particular product or service fit into this model. So I've got some good and some bad news, and we're starting with the bad news. The bad news is that this is a huge job, right? Even if nobody was trying to stop us, it's ridiculously hard to get somebody to change their mind about something. One person, let alone 8 billion people. So it's kind of an unimaginably big job in a certain way, but we wouldn't be here if we didn't feel like it wasn't worth doing, right? Nothing easy was ever worth doing. So it's already setting the bar pretty high, but it gets worse, which is that it's adversarial. We have banks, we have governments, and we have intelligence agencies that are actively trying to undermine and stop us. And of course, they also have fiat money printing, so they can just endlessly create resources for themselves, destroying everybody else's quality of living in their quest to stop us. So that's pretty bad news. And even worse, we're on limited resources, you know? We don't have an infinite money printer, and we don't even have all that many people total relative to the global population. They might be passionate, yes, but not so many. So we've really got to make very, very effective use of what we do have. But there's some good news, okay? I know this is not looking good, but there's some good news, which is that time is on our side. Like I said, people only move through the pipeline in one direction. So even if we don't do anything, other people are discovering Bitcoin, they're talking about it, they're selling it to each other, they're getting interested in cryptocurrency, they're creating businesses, and of course, old people unfortunately are dying off. Like Ryan said, people don't change their mind, they just die, right? And so the young people coming up, they're more open-minded, they move through that pipeline just by default. You know, if you were born after 2009, you've never known a world where there wasn't Bitcoin, which is very good news for us. And finally, people also get, you know, curious or desperate eventually, as there's infinite money printing, but it is destroying people's quality of lives until it gets to a point that they think, holy crap, I've got to figure out what's going wrong here. You know, people do get desperate. Secondly, we have the network effect. You know, it's just like those curves are all exponential. So the hardest part has kind of already been done. We're never going to have a harder day of getting people to adopt Bitcoin Cash than we did yesterday and every day the day before, because people are moving through the pipeline by default. And once we get it to a certain critical mass, it will largely just happen seemingly by magic, right? Nobody will be able to observe it kind of accelerating at the speed that it will. Now, the economic efficiency of BCH is also a huge advantage for us. We're here because we think Bitcoin Cash is the best money, which it is, which means that a group of people cooperating with Bitcoin Cash will be more efficient than any other group of people simply by default. So the invisible hand of the market is pushing us forward and making smarter decisions than we ever could individually, as long as we actually use our own tooling and cooperate and pay each other in BCH and so forth. And finally, we are inevitably going to win, just because that's the nature of the universe, right? Things that are optimistic and things that are based on technology always win in the end. Pessimists never win anything, you know? It doesn't matter who's trying to stop it. Once you've invented gunpowder, people are going to have rifles. There's no way to unring the bell, and there's no way to uninvent Bitcoin. There's no way to unconvince everyone that this is a thing that can't work and can't run in the real world. So we do have some things on our side, even if it's a pretty big job. Now, obviously, it's decentralized, so everybody is going to approach this problem in their own way. They're going to have their own resources, their own skills, their own locality, their own part of the world. So I can't give anyone any specific advice. Of course, you can talk to me individually, but I do have some ideas of general strategy that I think apply basically universally, and these are pretty time-tested things. So my inspiration comes from this movie, 300, which I hope many of you have seen. If you haven't, you should definitely go and watch it. It's absolutely fantastic, and it's a mythologized and slightly exaggerated story about the 300 Spartans who had to stop the hundreds of thousands of Persians, you know, way back in the ancient past, right? And this is a real historical event. It did actually happen, although it's exaggerated. And when I was in high school, this poster was on the wall of the gym at the high school, so I felt, you know, very like it's a part of my past. You know, I felt very connected to it, and I thought, you know, there's really something to this. And why do I say it's like Bitcoin? Well, you know, there's a lot of parallels, right? The Spartans were in the same situation that we're in. They're up against enormous odds, and they don't have very much resources relative to their competition. But they do have some pros, which is they're smart, they're focused, they're highly coordinated, right? They're willing to sacrifice, and they're on a strong mission. So that gives them a lot of leverage. But the cons are that they're few in number, so they're easily outflanked if they're kind of caught in a bad situation. They have to be very careful not to misallocate, you know, their strategy. And they're also weak to infiltration by chaos actors, right? We've seen hijacking Bitcoin, we've seen various splits, right? We've seen social engineering attempts to undermine the community, and that's exactly what was the problem for the Spartans too. So how do Spartans fight? Well, they fight like this. They attack the end of the funnel. So for us, one Spartan is worth easily 1,000 Persians or more. So when I had that pipeline before, the critical steps, like the further down the pipeline, the more important those people become. So that means for us, we need to attack the advocates and the builders and maybe the people making repeated transactions, right? People who are completely unaware of Bitcoin, don't waste your time on them. There's no point. Time is already pushing them in that direction, and those people are not going to have a significant amount of impact anyway. So this is why my strategy, similar to what Calisti was talking about yesterday, is to create BCH maximalists. You know, I find it very ironic or in a certain way unintuitive that I'm one of the biggest promoters of BCH, and my approach is not to talk to anybody who doesn't care. I just want to talk to people who already care about BCH a lot. And the more I talk to them, the more that pool of people grows, right? I'm not going out talking to anybody who doesn't care. So commitment beats quantity. It just takes time to grind out a winning edge. What else do Spartans do? Well, they fight in choke points, right? So for them, it was the Battle of Thermopylae, and they had the hot gates where they could line up and fight against a much bigger force. And as it says in the movie, like, the numbers would count for nothing, right? So they're happy to fight 1-on-1 or 10-on-10 or 100-on-100 at a small scale and win overwhelming victories one by one. And that starts to put small dents, but it adds up, and it's also very demoralizing for the opposition, right? So this is what we should be doing as well. Like, when you're trying to adopt people in your local community or in your family or in your friend group or whatever, don't try and shill it at a big dinner where everyone's there and everyone's talking, or a big party where everyone's distracted, something like that. Just find a quiet moment with one person, the most interested person in that group, and just hammer away on that slowly over time until they start to change their mind. And then you can move on to another person, right? There's other ways you could do it, about in an organization, you know, if you know a specific person at your job, just do it like that. Narrow your scope, right? Don't try and onboard the whole world, even though that is the end goal. Find your locality or your niche and just crush it on that. Don't worry about the big picture. Okay, strength comes from coordination. Now, this is also, you know, being memed a lot with the HODL meme, but it's true. Our strength comes from coordinating internally, because you don't have to convince anyone to coordinate internally. We're all already convinced. We're all already on the same team. So to make an exponential difference, we need things that we can put, even if we have a small weight combined, we can put it all on one point. So that's where, like, BCH Bankrun is a great idea. I recommend everyone get on the Help Me calendar and start posting up their events, encouraging other people to attend and so forth. BCH social media, obviously. I know some people are, you know, probably spend too much time like me on this, but if you're not involved, try and find those platforms, get involved with the main people and talk to each other. The more links we have amongst each other, the more effectively we will fight, obviously. And transacting and donating in BCH, like I said, that's just the invisible hand of the market. So if you need an idea for a product or for a feature or for what, you know, some guidance as to what to do next, all you need to think is, how can I coordinate more Bitcoin Cashes with each other? That can start with you, but it can also be applied in any other context. Anything that is bringing either market relationships or information flow among the existing Bitcoin Cash network together will be highly effective. Okay, don't get distracted by hangers-on, right? The Spartans had these guys, the Acadians, who kind of like want to come along at the start when there's a lot of glory and it seems really cool. And, you know, there's this whole scene of like, I brought more warriors than you did because the other guy has all these like potters and different people who aren't going to make a difference, right? And that's kind of the same situation we're in. We have, you know, multi-coiners, we have people obsessed with privacy, we have people who are in Bitcoin for the political reasons, you have people who are price speculating, you have people who are just opportunistically, you know, jumping on a trend. You have like all these different people, but they don't really make that much of a difference. Like, they're important. It's not that we want to push them away or exclude them or do anything like that, but you've got to really understand that they're not on the same mission. And so when the going gets tough, they're going to flake and be out of there, right? So don't put any more resources into them than you need. My model for that is like, I play RTS games, right? And you have the computer generated allies, and those guys are basically like fodder. You can't tell them what to do. You know, they're going to be useless, but they're going to get in the way of the opposition. And if they win a little bit on their own, that's great, right? But you don't have to control them, and you can't anyway. So just leave them to it, you know? Okay. Politics is inevitable. This is a bit of a tough one, because especially in its history, you know, Bitcoiners are so ideological, and with the libertarian and sort of voluntarist aspect, they think, okay, I'm not an authoritarian. We should just leave everyone be. As long as they're leaving me alone, that's fine. I just want to disconnect and disengage from all that stuff. But that's kind of impractical, right? Refusing to play is just choosing to lose. Politics is a reality of the world, so we have to be there and be part of it. Now, that doesn't mean we need to buy everyone off, although, you know, if you can do that, feel free to. But, you know, money talks, but so does righteousness, right? There's this scene in the 300 where the wife of Leonidas is kind of trying to represent his interest in their sort of corrupt political system, and she shows that the bad guy basically has been paid off and therefore undermines his credibility, right? So we need to be very both righteous and willing to pay when necessary to win in the game of politics. Now, that means two things. Firstly, locally, in your local political environment, whatever that, you know, might happen to be. And secondly, like the politics within BCH as well, okay? We need to pay a strong attention that we don't get out of sync, and that's why we have the chip process and that everybody coordinates, because if we get internal division, you know, we've already seen how that works out several times, and it's not very good. Okay, Spartans also are taking care of their health, right? This is like, should be obvious, it should go without saying, but it kind of doesn't, you know? When you have fitness, you are high energy, you're mentally clear, and your credibility is also just higher. Like, how are you going to tell someone, I found this revolution, I'm going to, you know, take over the world, and they're like, you know, you couldn't even lift a dumbbell. Like, how are you going to take on the world if you can't sort yourself, right? It's also intimidating. I mean, that's a little bit of a joke, but seriously, if you're going to crypto conferences and you're meeting people, it just makes such a big difference. Anybody who's ever, you know, gained a significant amount of muscle or got significantly fitter will tell you the responses you get to people are just completely different. So get a gym membership, eat steak, and take up an exercise related hobby like dancing. Okay, and this is kind of one of my last points, which is when they come to negotiate, you've actually already won. It doesn't really feel like it in that moment, because you're thinking, okay, now we're going to have to, you know, negotiate the differences between us. But at the end of the movie, when the Persians come to talk to the Spartans, that's it. That's game over. That's a Spartan win. The fact that they have to negotiate at all already means that every other method was tried and it didn't work. So they had to come to bargain. This is, you know, encapsulated in the classic phrase that Bitcoin is like: first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And we're kind of getting to that stage, right? Like, more of the BTC and crypto community is coming to be a part of BCH. I'm sure some of them are watching this live stream or they'll watch the recording. You know, increasingly people are joining our Telegram groups or following us on Twitter or pretending that they're not, but they are actually, you know, monitoring these things, right? And that actually already means that we've won. They're already convinced. Now, it's going to take them a little while to work through all their, you know, cognitive dissonance and cope, but we don't need to be making concessions to get them involved. There's absolutely no need for that, right? If they could find any other way to block us or ignore us or whatever, they would have done it, and it's all been tried and it's all failed. So I think everybody should just keep that in mind, because when people come to talk to you, it's good to just have that internal confidence and grounding and not need to be emotionally reactive. You know, you don't need to say, haha, I told you so. You don't need to be vindictive or anything like that. You just say, okay, welcome aboard, and you know they're coming to sit down at the table and they're here to listen. And I just kind of have one example of this to really drive home the point. You know, all these things that I'm saying, this methodology that is kind of how I approach adoption, you know, it is working. And this is from Callisti, who just a week ago, like you can see here, was talking on Twitter. He was arguing with Eric Wall, and he said, if we were to acquire more hash rate, would you consider your position? You know, would you reconsider being so against BCH and trying to dunk on us all the time and so forth? And Eric said, yes. But not only him, actually two other people, Charlie Spears, who runs the OpNext conference, is actually an amazing guy, and also somebody else who, I don't know, some other BTC guy, also said yes, right? So unprompted, they're already coming to say, hey, listen, you guys are saying something valuable, and the proof of work that we're all doing is really, really adding up. So I think that's just an example of what I showed on the previous slide. So just to summarize, it really just comes down to, we've got 8 billion bobs, they start out unaware, and we need as many of these guys as possible. And at some point, we hit a critical mass and we win. That's it. That's really the whole of Bitcoin in about 20 minutes. There you go. And I'm happy to take questions.
What happened to the warriors of Thermopylae?
Yeah, exactly. They all died. And the minority does rallies the rest of Greece, who then front up with a massive army, and the Persians can't win. The Persians are like, bloody hell, we had this much difficulty with 300 guys, and now we've got 40,000. Like, we're really screwed, right? And that's literally exactly what is happening in Bitcoin Cash. You have the privacy developers that we talked about before. You had Ross Ulbricht in jail. Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, obviously at the moment Roger Ver. Right. That is what's happening. Some people are going to die. That's the cost of the mission, and I'm not going to lie to you about it. So it really is going to come down to a few people. I'm just going to have to hit the deck for this to work, but. That's the price of entry. That's the price of being a Spartan. And if you're not up for it, that's okay. Nobody's forcing you to be on this mission, but I'm just being real with you. That's hopefully, it's just about counting the cost. We're going to win. It's just at what price. So we're going to find out.
From where we are today, in your opinion,
yes.
What do we need to be doing in order to create more Spartans?
Well, just kind of, all the things that I said there. I think it's really about being internally focused. That's the other example of it. The biggest problem I see in the BTC in the BCH community, besides these not adhering to these points that I've already mentioned, is people are still nitpicking over the past. They're still going back and arguing these same old tired thing. That doesn't change anything. Who would ever join up to the Spartans if they were all looking backwards? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You need to see an army that you can be convinced is going to win to want to join it yourself, right? And that's not going to happen if everyone's still looking backwards. And there's history is important, don't get me wrong. The Spartans have a strong culture and a history, and they teach that to their children, so that is important. But it's just any kind of regressive whining or bitching. Spartans don't whine. I don't want to hear it. And I'm dunking on people on social media and stuff as well too, so don't get me wrong. Like, you can be firm with people, but I'm always trying to pair that with a forward-looking thing. Oh, okay, you're still wrapped up in that, but did you notice BCH just shipped the Velma upgrade, which has what you want? You kind of got to lead one thing into the other. You get people a bit riled up emotionally, that's nothing wrong with that, but then you've got to pair it with a strong, positive vision, yeah.
All right, and then do I get to be the guy who drop kicks the guy into the pit, or do you want to do it?
It can be you, that's all right. I think you've got more of the temper for it.
Any other questions?
So can we measure the bobs going through the process? And
that's
if we can, obviously the drop-off in transaction volume, does that suggest some are moving backwards, or is there just some sort of gap, chasm that they're crossing?
Well, so there isn't actually a drop-off in transaction volume, in the sense that if you aggregate all cryptocurrency transactions across all blockchains, that number has and always has been skyrocketing up. Even when BTC got hijacked and that fell off a cliff, and we're still suffering from that today, the activity just moved on to ETH and SOL and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's all just people inevitably moving down the pathway. The point is that we need to somehow focus them all into the BCH space. So the way I kind of see it is, BCH was losing in that period from the hijacking, and then the first split, and then the second split. But Sovereign Nan, shout out to him, had one of the best comments that I've ever seen, where he said that smart BCH was the first Bitcoiner win. That was the first time that there was a significant calamity in the community that could have resulted in more fracturing. Okay, some people have become the smart BCH maximalists, and some people are main chainers, and accusations fly and it all degenerates. But that didn't happen. People were just like, okay, we made our mistakes. That project is dead, and we got to focus on what was working, which was the main chain, right? So that was the first actual win for BCH. And if you look, from that moment on, the number of Spartans has once again started increasing, right? That was Cash Tokens, Abla, now we're launching Velma, we got more things coming up. So I would say that the Spartans were losing between about 2015 and mid-2020. Two, I think, was with the CoinFlex explosion, and that was the critical tipping point that things turned around and we started winning. Yeah.
Okay, I've got a question.
Yeah.
So, 150 episodes in.
Yeah.
were there any positions that you held when you started the podcast that have changed now?
Yeah, there surely would be. I can't say that there isn't. I mean, it's obviously hard for me to think of an example because I will just rewrite in my own mind what I thought. I know we have a huge clangor. There's an episode where we talked about when FTX sponsored Limited Resources. They sponsored the Magic the Gathering podcast, and I was super thrilled about that. Somebody can now go dig up this clip, but we were on the show, and I said that the people who were jumping on that and saying, oh, this is a crypto scam coming into our scene, etc., etc., and I was very bullish on it. I was like, no, this is just crypto adoption kind of taking its course. They're not getting scammed, and they don't kind of understand this big picture thinking. I said something to that effect, and then, of course, FTX is one of the biggest scams in crypto history. So I completely missed on that one. But otherwise, I think if you watch old episodes of the podcast, like, the hit rate is pretty high, to be honest. And anybody who's been listening for a long time, I think, knows that, you know, so that would be, yeah, one of the biggest things. I've turned around on, 10 minute blocks. I was like, that was probably a bad idea, but the more I thought about it, I thought, okay, maybe that's just an arbitrary constant. Yeah.
All right. If that's everything, give Jeremy another.
Thank you. All right.